Well, I'm the surgeon, not the butcher. Glad I didn't shut you down. Well, I don't care what anyone says. There's room for us both in this here town.
Welcome to Ideas Identity Podcast with J. Michael Hudson. Make yourself comfortable.
No, I'm warm.
And we're
too
here
warm.
Here with Gene. And how do you pronounce your last name?
Bojarski.
Bojarski. Yeah, I haven't even heard it. Yeah, well, welcome. How's it going today?
Well, besides being frazzled by trying to find this place.
Actually, yeah. Oh my gosh. Now I turned it on. The last minute was totally on. Unrecorded. So, yeah, welcome to the Ideas and Identity Podcast. I'm J. Michael Hudson. I'm here with Gene
Bojarski.
Yeah, and you finally found the place after somewhat of an adventure.
Yes.
Well, sorry I was so difficult, but in the end it was worth it, right? You know, yeah.
Well, so basically I decided that, you know, I'm going to try and sell my writing.
Okay.
I'm working on a book.
Oh, exciting. What kind of book?
It's going to be kind of a strange book. You probably don't know Midtown, but there's a convenience store called Linwood Superfoods.
I do, yeah, across from Costco.
Yeah, which I call Linwood. I live right in back of there, which I call Linwood Stupid Foods. And the book starts out. See, all kind of weird stuff goes on there.
Weird.
And the clerks are very interesting people. And the book starts out when I was going to France one time, and I got up really early in the morning to take my dog for a walk. And I was a smoker at that time to buy cigarettes. And I'm coming back by that Linwood Superfoods. It's about 7 o'clock in the morning. And I hang my dog's leash on the security gate and I walk into the store. And nobody was moving. There was three teenage boys in there and the clerk, Carlene. And I'm waiting for these boys to buy whatever they're going to buy and go. And they're not going. And they're not buying anything.
Were they in line to buy things?
No, they had just robbed her.
Oh.
I walked in on an armed robbery.
Ooh, that's
and the
weird,
little
yeah.
boy who was next to me had a gun in his pocket.
Ew.
And so I'm waiting for them to go, and they're not going. And so I'm like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do, you know, maybe I should buy a light or two. And then all of a sudden, one of the boys jumps up and grabs a carton of cigarettes, and they all ran out. And I said, Carlene, what's going on here? And she said, they just robbed me. They just took $100 out of the cash register, and that one next to you had a gun, but somehow between me just not caring, you know, and just being totally calm, they didn't know what to make of me and the dog and Carlene and...
Well, you're pretty intimidating, you know. Like Arnold Schwarzenegger shows up in the scene, you know, you're regulating, they were intimidated, well, you know. Yeah, that's pretty weird. I guess in that part of town, maybe not as weird as we'd like it to be. But anything else weird happened there, like as far as just the customers or is it the business
people? It's the people who come in there.
Oh, okay.
You know, they just have such a strange clientele.
I see.
Of, you know, and then there's homeless people, and then there's Mexicans that hang out, you know, in front looking for work.
I see.
It's just kind of a strange
so
situation, but it's, I'm letting the clerks interestingly, are aspiring writers as well.
Oh, in real life? Or in your book?
In real life.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. So they're
like Richard. Richard is one of them. He used to live in my house, on the top floor of my house.
I see.
For years, and he wants to write vampire stories, and he has a twin brother, who wants to write werewolf stories. So I'm going to help everybody. And then there is the Lost Boy of Sudan. Was one of those, you know, he's African, and he came over with these Lost Boy things, and he wants to write.
One of the actual Lost Boys of Sudan that
yes.
the movie was about? He's,
yes, exactly. Exactly.
Wow. Well, it's kind of
so
celebrity.
He wants, okay. he, you know, everybody is going to have their own chapter to tell their story.
Okay. So you're, but you're...
But I'm going to be the overall editor and, you
is
know.
Is it nonfiction then?
Yeah, it's nonfiction.
Oh, okay. So you're just gonna it'll be like a Tales from the Linwoods nonfiction tales, or like just a biopic of all the people that are involved there, or biopic,
yeah, the store
is
you know the store the
sense.
Store is
biography.
Owned that's well. The store is owned by some Pakistani people or something like that, and so I think they have an interesting story too. Is like how did you get into this business?
See, so you're just going to find out what's going on with all these people and then write it up.
Yeah.
Like in a dramatic tale. Yeah. So it's not like a novel. It's
no.
more like a, okay, how far are you into it?
I just have the introduction so far.
Okay.
And that, the robbery story. And then I'll probably go into more about myself and my history with the store, you know. Because that was a big attraction for me. I lived in New York City, and then I went to graduate school in Chicago. And I was used to having stores open all the time.
Yeah.
And especially if you're a smoker, you know, which I was at that time. I'm so glad I quit. That store used to be open 24 hours a day. So this was a big attraction for why I bought my house there.
I see.
So I would always have a store to go to.
Yeah.
Within walking distance.
But then they're not 24 hours now, so it's not quite as good. But you don't smoke cigarettes anymore, so it doesn't make as much difference that
That's
you have to
right.
be able to get there at 5 in the morning, what have you. I see. So you have this relationship with the local market then. When I first moved to Kansas City, I was looking on my phone for a store, just a grocery store. I was living on Harrison, and kind of closer to Linwood and Harrison. But there was no grocery, there's hardly any grocery stores around there besides the Save-A-Lot. And the Save-A-Lot doesn't have a very good selection, and a lot of the stuff in there just, I don't think is very healthy at all. And so I was looking for where to go, but you have to really drive a few miles from that part of town to get to a real grocery store if you don't have a Costco.
I know, and I don't like driving that much, you know. I did when I was younger, but I like walking.
Yeah.
And so
isn't that what makes a good neighborhood, that you know people can walk around and do stuff?
Yeah. And having Costco there is great. The only problem is I'm just one person, and so I don't need to buy the giant size of everything.
Right. It's nice for some things. You can't get really everything there that you want in the same way. But I do like to get a big bag of chicken that'll last most of the month. You know, it's nice, for instance.
Yeah, I switch around on, you know, sometimes I get salmon and sometimes...
They have really good prices on salmon, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I see.
And,
Well,
It's just really convenient.
So when you're working on your novel, do you wake up first thing in the morning and work on it? Like, have you worked on it today already?
I haven't worked on that one. I'm editing a travel story that my daughter wants to see, because it's called The Brussels to Nice Connection. And it's a story about taking my 17-year-old daughter on a vacation to France. But since she was 17, I figured she would really like to have a friend come. And it just so happens that she has a friend in Brussels from when she went to a French immersion school. And when she was in sixth grade, they traveled to Brussels and to France, and she became friends with this family who live in Brussels, but they're Hungarian, and they're really interesting people, and they have a daughter exactly her age. So it's like we would just get into all these adventures. And
so it's also nonfiction then.
Yeah.
But you would get like lost through the American women in France and what things. Okay. So
and
that's
and we would have guys hitting on us out the wazoo. Because
bet.
Here's two 17-year-old girls. Mm-hmm. One has blonde hair and blue eyes, and the other one has red hair and green eyes. And they're both gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And like, we'd be driving around Europe and have guys like putting notes. You know, we'd stay at a hotel and we'd come out in the morning and there would be a note on my car. Please call me.
Mm-hmm.
Please call me.
Yeah, right.
You know, Costell. Like, who's Costell?
Yeah, just this guy who doesn't know how to pick up women. Were they just coming up to you at the cafe? Was it unpleasant for you to get that much attention, or was it pleasant?
Well, it was fun, but you know, I had so much trouble keeping track of those girls.
I bet. Yeah. Well, were they
because
trying
they
to get...
they everywhere we went,
mm-hmm.
these guys were all flock around.
And they would try and separate you. And,
yes.
Yeah, and be like, oh, come back to my couch and stuff, you know. And then, I guess, you say there were adventures. I mean, I don't want to steal the thunder of your story when you write it. But was it, I mean, do you think that's appropriate? Like, compare that to the United States. Like, here it seems to me like you just shouldn't, in 99.9 of the situations, ever try and approach a woman to like ask her out or for her number or something like that. But in Europe it seems like it's just everything's fair game. You know, at the parking lot, you know, leave the note, get the grocery store, at the restaurant. Is that what you were seeing? Like at any time was an opportunity for these guys to try and meet women?
Yeah, and I had so much trouble keeping, like when we decided to take kind of a very out of the way kind of route. You know, you can get from Brussels to Nice faster, but I thought it would be interesting to go through Switzerland and then down the coast of Italy to get to Nice. You know, like doing kind of a big loop,
okay.
kind of thing, because mm-hmm. I like Italy and I mm-hmm. wanted to spend more
time.
Well, I had
to go through the Alps, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Italy. And so, you know, like, I wanted to go to Lake Como because I had just thought it was the most beautiful place in the world when I traveled after college, and I wanted to go back there. So we went and stayed in a little town called Menaggio, and immediately these girls find the boys.
Mm-hmm. was that what they were looking for? Were they wanting to make out with a bunch
kids.
Of Europeans? Yeah, okay.
That's kids.
Was it attention, or were they actually interested in like a real romantic rendezvous? Do you think?
No,
probably not.
Just
attention.
Really.
Okay.
Yeah.
I
just
see.
You know, to hang, and they hated the fact that I was with them.
Right.
You're because nerdy. I was yeah. really
uh-huh. no fun.
Because this is one of the funny things that happened. So we get to this little town called Menaggio on Lake Como
mm-hmm.
pretty late.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize how harrowing it was going to be for me to have to drive through the mountains
mm-hmm.
and the tunnels.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought my daughter would be able to help me with the driving. She's a very good driver. She was 17. She had a license. But you can't, a 17-year-old can't drive a rental car.
No, they can't. Yeah, not a good idea. Yeah, all kinds of risks there. I see.
And we went and stayed. There was no place. The place was full. There was no space in the hostel. At first, we were going to go stay in a hostel. Mm-hmm. No place in the hostel. Mm-hmm. We go to a hotel, and there's no space in the hotel. But the hotel people really liked us, see, because we speak French. Mm-hmm. And the Italian people... If you speak in French and the Italian person speaks in Italian, you can actually understand each other. Hmm. So we went and we had a nice dinner. The hotel people had another building with apartments in it. And so they rented us an apartment.
Oh, well, yeah.
What could be better?
That's nice, yeah.
And, but by this time it's getting late. And I am really want to wash up and freshen up and all this kind of thing. I turn on the water in this apartment, and guess what? No water comes out.
Oh.
No water comes out. And I'm like, what's going on here? And this apartment building looked down on the square of the town, and there were still people... a few people hanging out there that I had been talking to. And so I called down to them and I said, qu'est-ce que c'est le problème? Il n'y a pas de l'eau. And you know what they told me? This is a city that's right on the lake, on Lake Como. So what do you see when you look out? Water. Water is everywhere. But it wasn't in the buildings because the Italians, they don't have it together enough to run the water plant.
They didn't even tell you. It wasn't even like, oh yeah, there's no water, no running water, but you can stay there. Yeah, like no drinking water. That seems pretty strange.
So this is what the girls hated, because I'm like, I need to get cleaned up or something. You know, I've been driving all day. I'm all sweaty and things like that. As I call that town the land of no water because there's no water at night.
At night? In the daytime though there was?
Yes.
They turn the water off at night just for... Alright, well yeah, okay.
Because you're supposed to save up your water during the day in case you need any at night. Because they're not efficient enough to have water all the time.
And that was like 1990 or something? Or 19...
She's going to turn 27 in February, so it was so she was 17.
Early 2000s.
Yeah, it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, well, I guess...
And so, then they hated it because I said, there's a lake, there is water. I'm going to go jump in the lake.
They didn't want you to?
No, because they were hanging out with the boys on the dock, and they didn't want me out there spying on them.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh. You know, is what's going on.
Which you really kind of actually have to watch out for them, because they'll, you know, all kinds of things can happen in Europe. Well, you've seen Taken, I assume. Have you seen Taken with Liam Neeson? No, it's the whole thing's about his 17-year-old daughter goes to Europe and gets immediately kidnapped from the airport, basically. And then
it wasn't that bad. But that particular night, so I irritated them by coming down and taking a swim. And then I said, well, this is a lot better, so I'm going to go to sleep. I go to sleep, and I wake up, and it's like 5 o'clock in the morning, and they're not there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like...
9 months later.
Oh, shit. My girls are missing.
Yeah, it's good parenting right there. Yeah.
I know.
A plus. Take care of them for 17 years, go to Europe, and now...
And then they're gone.
There they go, yeah.
Totally and So I get up and I throw on a cover up and I just go outside saying, I'm gonna find these girls.
So then that you lived the whole Taken scenario before the movie ever came out, albeit on a much less dramatic.
And guess
where
what? I found them right away.
You could set the water right there if you want.
I found them right away.
Oh, oof.
I went down to the lake, you know, because that's where I left them.
Oh, they were so late. They were smart. They didn't get taken back to someone's apartment.
No.
You know, they were, you're like, oh, like from 4 o'clock in the morning, come on back to my apartment. No, let's stay at the lake. Let's watch the sunrise. Come on back to my apartment. They must be pretty smart then.
Yeah.
You know, they were not seduced that easily.
But, you know, no, I found them. Walking with these boys on the walkway by the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you girls, get your butts back into that apartment. And you boys, go home. Now.
Yeah, you did the full, full mom thing.
Yeah.
They're like rolling eyes. This is not vacation. I see.
So that's one of the funny stories in there. But, you know,
Then
I had my own adventures.
Well, you know, I like the podcast. The idea of the podcast isn't so much to like rehash through all the best stories. You know, it's
okay.
Really like what I want to focus on is what's going on with you, like now, like what your goals are, like you're writing the books, but it's kind of undercutting your stories to tell all the stories that are going to be in your book ahead of time. But that was a good example story. But we don't want all the stories, you know. Otherwise,
and I've written a couple of books. You can get them on Amazon.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I'm self-published, you know.
Really? So
I
like
wrote when...
all nonfiction?
Yeah.
How are they selling?
Not well. And I got a bad review, too.
I hear that happens on the internet, right?
They said that I was infantile. Ooh. And, all right, this is what the book was about. It's called The Book of Daniel.
Uh-huh.
I'm 60. I just turned 64, and so this was back when I was 60, And I fell in love. This was one of those, in France, they call it a coup de foudre, a lightning bolt. I fell in love with a 30-year-old boy.
When you were how old?
60.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's a pretty big.
A little bit there, yeah.
Difference there.
Yeah, one for the books, even. Well, so you wrote a book.
All right, but yeah.
But this is the book you wrote about? You wrote the book about the relationship?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
because this is what happened. That was the time of the Occupy. Remember the Occupy?
Of course.
All right. Well, I'm a big libertarian, and these Occupy people are not very bright. But I didn't think it was right, you know, for the police to be beaten up on and shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I start seeing these messages from my libertarian friends that they're beating up on the Occupies. And I said, I better go check this out and make sure that the police are not beating up on the Occupies in Penn Valley Park by my house. So I took my dog. My dog is a big character in what goes on, too.
Mm.
To the park, and they're having a meeting, and some woman gets up and says, and no men are allowed to speak in this meeting.
Oh.
And I said, that's bullshit!
Whoa. Yeah.
And I got kicked out of the meeting immediately.
I bet, yeah. They're like, how did the Occupy people kick you out? Was like someone saying, just leave, or were you told verbally, or did someone kind of, you gotta go, or like, how did you leave?
They were just upset when I said, that's bullshit.
Like
know?
Everything went boo.
And so I said, I'm going,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Hmm.
And so... I said, these people are really stupid. So I went over to talk to the police, because there was two police there.
Hmm.
And this was probably not really smart, but I took my favorite weapon, named Spike. Spike is my friend. I have smuggled Spike to France and back.
I see. So this is your
because
personal
defense. Because this is my...
When you think something might happen, you take it with
you.
Yeah,
because I had to kick these Tunisians out of my condo because they had stopped paying rent.
Huh.
And,
So you went there with Spike and intimidated them out of the condo?
Yes.
You're like, you've got to go, just you. Not even, like, two guys behind you or anything like that. And they left right then?
Yeah.
They're like, okay.
I made them go.
Ha. Wow. Well, it's Europe for you, I guess. They're just like, okay, no violence.
Well, what it was the people who had ripped me off, they knew I was coming. Because mm-hmm. I told them I'm coming, mm-hmm. right? So they left. I didn't expect anyone to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But they pulled their last scam.
Mm-hmm. They rented it to a bunch of Europeans. They just think that we're stupid. They'll, you know, like...
Well, these were poor little Arab boys.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
They were just little kids.
Yeah. And they probably had paid a lot of money for it, and they weren't going to get anything once you got back. Yeah, so it's... Oh, man. How do you find... People, what are you gonna... So now we were in the middle of two stories, though. You see, we've segued all back to France and the condo, and then we were, but just a minute ago, we were in Occupy.
Oh, yeah.
So,
this is what happened. So I'm at the Occupy thing, I talk to the police, and then I'm thinking, I'm talking to the police, and I've got a weapon in my pocket, and I had like one of the, kind of like a sweater vest on,
mm-hmm.
so I'm trying to
mm-hmm.
hide it.
Yeah.
And so they don't realize that I have a weapon.
Uh-huh.
So I talked to the police, and they were cool. And I said, well, what are you doing here? And they said, basically, these people are so stupid that we're here to protect them from the local criminals.
Mm-hmm.
So then that was cool. You know, nobody was beating them up. I just was going to go home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm finished walking my dog. There's no problems. I didn't have to kill anybody.
Mm-hmm.
This was... And I walk by the cook tent.
Mm-hmm.
And there was that boy.
Yeah?
He was the most beautiful boy I had ever seen.
Wow.
And he had hair all the way down his back.
Mm-hmm.
Which I like long hair, guys.
In true Occupy fashion.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I couldn't let it go. Uh-huh. I couldn't walk by and go home.
Mm-hmm.
So I go up there, and I say, hi.
Okay.
My name is Jean, and I live here in the neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
And I tell you what, you know, if you want to take a shower or something.
Ooh. Oh, look. Said the spider to the fly.
You know, you can stop by sometime.
Okay.
Like tonight.
Okay, yeah. And is that what happened?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Jean. Oh, I bite my finger. Ooh, la la. Okay, well, yeah. And that's how it all started. And how long did it last for, the whole affair?
Not that long because, you know, he was so beautiful. He had all these women,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Oh, okay.
But,
Was he tall?
No, he stayed. No, he wasn't a real big person.
Okay.
But, was he built.
Is he still in Kansas City?
He lives across the street from me.
Oh, still. Okay. You see him all the time?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And, but you're on good terms now?
Yeah.
And it was satisfying?
Well, that night,
okay.
I had to go, you know, I'm a freelance writer, and I had a meeting scheduled at one of my clients the next day. You never went to sleep.
Okay, long night. Ooh, la, la.
But then he disappeared.
Okay, in true Occupied hippie long hair fashion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what's going on here? You know, why doesn't he come and see me again? Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. And right when I had given up, because I couldn't go back there and go chasing a little boy like that.
Not in his tent of the Occupy. It's a little weird, you know, like what's gonna, who knows, you know, what'll happen there, right? It's kind of like crossing the, you know, the jets and the, what is it, the, from West Side Story.
But I had given up, and see, I had taken his picture, and I had a picture of him, and he didn't come back, and he didn't come back, and he didn't come back. And like 3 weeks go by, mm-hmm. and I gave up, mm-hmm. and I took the picture, and I ripped it up, and mm-hmm. said, you know,
right.
you can't just
nope.
spend your life pining away after something you can't have. And guess what happened the day after I ripped up the picture?
Mm-hmm. He returns. But
he showed up on my porch
uh-huh.
with all his stuff.
Oh, he wants to move in.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. True Occupy fashion. Like, you went right to the...
He, you know, he realized that these Occupy people were really stupid and got really tired of them.
Mm-hmm.
And he just decided to leave.
Mm-hmm. And
I forgot to tell you a little bit of a detail, which is he was actually escaped from prison.
Oh, he's on the run from the...
So he needed some place to hide out.
What was he in prison for? Kind of significant, isn't it, right? If he needs to stay in a place like...
Supposedly stealing cars when he was 15 years old.
But you're suspicious.
I think it was just... I mean, how can they keep someone in prison for 15 years?
On car theft. Do you have his full name?
Yeah, I have his full name.
Have you checked Missouri CaseNet?
It's all cleared up now.
Oh, okay. But you believe whatever is he said was going on.
Yeah, but I think it was just for being an incorrigible youth.
Oh, okay. So if he's 30, it just seems like that would, you know, he wouldn't have been. He wouldn't be, unless he was on probation for 10 years for stealing cars, and he like wasn't cooperative.
So
with
here I am, a 60-year-old woman,
mm-hmm.
embroiled in this.
Mm-hmm.
Really kind of
sexy. Well,
bad situation.
Well, they say don't date people who have less money or more problems than you. This is like you're breaking both those rules big time, right? And so in the end, was it satisfying? Are you glad that you did it? You wrote a book about it.
Yeah.
It must have been some kind of... So you wrote this book. His name was Daniel, and you wrote a book called The Book of Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
And is it like... Is it just the story of what happened, or does it have, like, some tenets of his belief? Like, Daniel said one day, that all love will come and go, as the birds...
Well, what happened was, the relationship was so volatile,
mm-hmm.
and we would get in, you know, big arguments, and...
In true Occupy fashion...
And I decided that we had to cut out the sex because it was making me crazy.
Because
I was so addicted to him.
Okay. All right. So
that's what happened in the end after, you know,
he was just a few months,
uh-huh. you know. Well, what happened was I helped him get that house across the street.
Oh. He bought a house off of this? Or he rented the house, how did he get a house? He goes from being homeless, hiding, he's with you for 3 months, now he's buying houses. That's like some Tony Robbins stuff, isn't it?
Because I was real good friends with my neighbor,
mm-hmm.
who's a Chinese gay guy.
Okay.
Little guy, who got here somehow from Vietnam. And he worked in a hotel for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And... acquired quite a bit of real estate. And he used to live in that house, but he didn't live there anymore, and he was trying to sell it, and he couldn't get anybody to buy it. So I said, Daniel will buy it. You know, what payment would you want a month? You know, let him pay you, and then he could rent the rooms in the house and collect all the rent.
Okay.
And have money to
for his own
pay,
rent, kind of.
Yeah.
Okay, so he would be, so there's enough houses to rent to a few different people.
Well, it's a really big house with lots of rooms.
Is that what he did?
He
rents it out to like five or six people.
But
now?
Yeah,
he runs the whole
show? You know, he kept letting in, you know, the occupants.
Yeah, people who aren't going to pay rent. You know? People that are like, oh yeah,
crazy people.
Uh-huh. But he's pulled it off to this day, which is several years now, right? Like how he was able to make it. He still lives there. He still, you know, is the.
Well, I don't know where he is right now. I haven't seen him for a while.
Probably touring.
He came by a couple of weeks ago. I mean, I had not been involved with him for quite a while. And can you imagine? See, but he helps me out with a lot of things. So he has keys to my house.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Because, like, he takes care of my dogs when I'm not there and stuff like that.
Okay.
If I don't have someone else. Can you imagine that you wake up at 5:30 in the morning because someone is
coming into your house? You
grabbed your leg.
Oh, he did this.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like in a like amorous way.
Yeah.
Oh, so he's like on again, off again. Hey, are you ready for my action or not? Okay.
And he knows I can't say no to him.
Oh,
see?
Okay. So now it's on again, off again. Over.
I don't know exactly what's going on.
I see.
But I can't. You know, I can't put up with that kind of thing.
It's really
so. But now I have kind of a bad situation.
Put up with.
I kind of have a bad situation because I'm still married.
Hmm.
My husband lives
up
the street, and he's always at my house, and so it's like how to keep. And then I have a new boyfriend.
We have to draw a chart here because we're losing track.
And I have to keep these guys from bumping into each other.
Look at you.
And I'm 64 years old.
Yeah, right. Hmm. Well, I guess they must be coming back for something. I don't have any advice for you, though. I mean, and you're sharing it with the whole internet here, your situation. So maybe there'll be some comments or something like that on SoundCloud, where people like which one you should go with, get back with your ex-husband, like it's one of those shows.
No, but he's too old. He's 73. I need some younger.
But it's not an advice
younger
show.
Younger guys.
I'm just, you know. So I don't have, like, any, you know, advice for that situation. I'm just trying to figure out, like, what's going on with you. And so it sounds like you have a lot of good options. Like, romantically, you're getting a lot of affection in your life.
Yeah, because, you know, when I took your class, I was really depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And no sex drive or anything, you know?
I see.
And then all of a sudden, it's all of a sudden, it was like there's some kind of smell coming out or something. They all started, all the moths started fluttering around.
About what? Like at the end of the class, like last summer? Like
no. Well, my birthday was coming up, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So,
the last couple of months, you think? Or you think it was, when did it seem like it changed to where, was there, was
when
like,
Daniel came over.
Like a few weeks ago?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that's really not like you took my class, because it's been like almost, you know, half a year since the class was over.
No, but I'm just saying that.
Okay. At that time, it's been a big difference and change, I see. So the last, you know, 3 months, though, it's like you're, what can you say, I don't know what would cause, I mean, it's not my area of expertise, you know, what causes all of a sudden a change in, like, multiple men to change, start, like, going, you know, pursuing one woman, it's not, I really don't know, but I'm glad that you're having that much attention. I mean,
it's hard for me to find time to do my writing, because I'm busy all the time.
So now we're at the real conflict. There's all, like, your people are banging on the door, they want some loving, but you're like, I need to write and get this creativity stuff done. Like, what are, So what are, like, what are your goals then with the writing? Do you want to, is there a number of
books
you want
to
write?
Well, I want to finish this. I want to finish, you know, I want to finish the Linwood Stupid Foods book.
Yeah.
I would also like to gather up all my travel writing
mm-hmm.
from, you know, I kept these journals and maybe put them all together into something. And so I'm always working on something, and now I just keep having these ideas
mm-hmm.
for writing up more blog type of things.
I see.
So when I have an idea, I have to go and write it. So then you have to...
Yeah. But then what you, if you're like me, you end up with all these kind of new ideas that have been worked on a little bit, and all of them you need to go back to later and edit them and produce them properly.
Yeah.
But that's like seems like a lot less fun a lot of the time to me than the original creation and the, you know, thumbnail sketching of the project and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So my notebooks are like filled with all these things that there's no way I can make it to step two on. But then there's things like this podcast or some of the music I've been working on that I've just been able to push to the front burner long enough.
Yeah, as far as
to get those things. So it's kind of like a prioritization. You know? But you're
I'm going to try and sell some of these. I just haven't really, because I have a number of new pieces that I've written. One story, and this is how the whole thing got started writing the book, was because not too long ago, I got bitten by my own dog.
Okay.
He has a real bad thing about his food,
mm-hmm.
and I'm usually really careful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dogs will snap if you get near the food.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you didn't have to put him down.
But what happened was I was trying to be nice and give him some hamburger,
uh-huh.
and I wasn't thinking. It dropped on the floor and mm-hmm. reached down like that.
Mm-hmm. Can't give food and then take it back from dogs. They're like, it's mine now. So how does that tie into your story? Are you writing that as a...
I was thinking about writing about this experience, and went to the Stupid Foods, and I was talking to Carlete again, the one who got robbed, and I said, I want to write about getting bit and being a writer and how difficult that was to not be able to write, you know, because my hand was so sore. And I said to Carlene, I said, you know, I'm going to write a story about this, but I'm going to make it come out differently. I'm going to say that the dog bit my hand off.
Completely.
Yeah.
That would be kind of like a Shel Silverstein.
What would a writer do if you got your hand bit off?
Write half as much. That stands to reason. Well,
When the writer got her hand bit off, they gave the writer a choice that she could either get a hand transplant of, you know, someone's
hand. A murderer who just died from a state penitentiary.
You could either get a hand transplant, or the other choice that they gave me was, did I want a bionic hand? And I said, I want a bionic hand.
So then that twist the story into kind of superhero territory.
Yeah.
Then your hand is actually like a monkey paw, which is it's kind of like the crux of the story. What can it do? Like, can it read minds? Can it tell
yeah,
the future?
Yeah, and the thing is, and I said this bionic hand was great. It could type. It could wash the dishes. You know, it could. Basically, anything you needed it to do, the hand would do. But the only problem was, it couldn't feel.
Oh. I thought you were going to say it has a mind of its own. I've been kind of steering.
But
that
in the end, the hand does get a mind of its own.
But there's no fear.
Because one day, the hand decides to be part of my body.
So it integrates and suddenly you can feel it?
Yeah.
In the story.
Mm-hmm.
This is fiction now. The first fiction story that you've said.
Yeah.
So then, well.
And all of a sudden, the hand could feel.
It's in dramatic, don't want to get into theory here, but there has to be, you can't just all of a sudden happen, otherwise you're taking away the whole tension building of the story. There has to, what changed? Or what had changed inside of the character so that brought this change about? It can't just be like, and then chapter two, well, everything changed, now I can feel the hand, all that stuff I was writing about before, I guess it doesn't matter.
But this is like a really, you know, less than 2 pages story.
Oh, so it's more like a, well, it's more like a creative essay then.
Yeah.
There's no.
And see, it's kind of a companion to another story I have.
What's the theme, though? What does the getting the feeling in the hand symbolize? What does it mean to her? Why? What brought about that transformation? It's like the Hulk when he transforms into the big green
she
Hulk.
Just
he has
gets
to get
really
angry first.
She gets really lucky.
She did luck. It's the hand of God causes the hand to feel. Well, I'm pretty critical when it comes to stories and theory. And I'm sorry.
All right, it's just a funny idea that I had.
Well,
all right, but see, it's a companion to another story I have. And see, now I've got all of these clerks at Lidwood Superfoods
as characters.
Involved in literary criticism, you know.
I bet.
I'll finish something and I'll go and I'll leave it for them to read.
And
they like
out.
Them. They like it. They like the stories.
Oh, good.
And so the other story I've given them is an old story that is called The Old Lady Who Got What She Wanted Twice.
You got what she wanted twice? This sounds
right,
like the Book of Daniel.
It's the same story. This is what happened. You know, all of a sudden, I'm getting old, and I look in the mirror, and I see all these wrinkles and things like that, and so this is the story. So I decide to have a head transplant, and I go to the place where they have the heads, and I pick out a nice head, like a kind of Natalie Wood head. Of course, I don't want Natalie Wood's brain, so I have them take my brain and stick it in her head and then put it on me so that I could look young again.
Naturally. Well, you have...
But it has my brain in it, see?
There's a Steve Martin movie, All of Me. Have you seen that?
Uh-uh.
I think it's called All of Me. It's where the same, he does a brain transplant between the the unattractive woman he fell in love with. So he falls in love with one unattractive woman's mind and then one really attractive woman's body. And so he wants to do a brain transplant. But it goes all wrong.
That's a good idea.
He falls in love with a brain in a jar. That's right. And so he wants to transmit the jar into this beautiful woman's body. But then it turns out she has this compulsive overeating habit. And so by the time for whatever reason, he's in some kind of coma. By the time he wakes up, she's like, you know, morbidly obese. But he still loves her. That's the last scene of the movie. But it's
anyway, in this story, what happens is, you know, she gets tired of having all these young guys chasing her after she gets the new head.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really unproductive. You know, when she's a writer and she needs her time to write. So she decides she wants her old head back.
Oh, okay. Well, there's the poetic justice, or like the, you know, the theme. Well, there's a Twilight Zone about that, too, where there's a couple
And it's like, and the end of the story is, she was no longer pretty, but her smile lit up her face.
Oh, that's sweet. Mm-hmm. And then it's like you're back where you started, and mm-hmm. it's all okay, you know.
Yeah, and so, you know, she cut down on the amount of men, and
that's actually what's going on with you right now. But you didn't have a head transplant, and you didn't have your head put back. You've just been the same all the way along, but you still have the same problem with the men coming.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like you have to, your social life is interfering with all the time you need to write. Is that what's really happening? Okay. So
I'm going to go on vacation.
Vacation? Do you write on vacation?
Yeah.
That's not vacation then. You're going on a writing sabbatical. Which is fine.
I'm going to Florida.
Perfect, yeah.
On the 18th.
Oh,
because
okay.
What happened was, I reconnected with my cousins on Facebook, and my cousin's wife sends out a real nice New Year's thing saying, you know, thank you all for being my friends on Facebook. It's been, you know, it's really, I really enjoy being your friends. And I say, well, I really enjoy having met you on Facebook too. See, I don't know her personally, my cousin's wife. My cousin is like 73 or 74.
So they invited you down there?
Yeah.
Oh, hey.
You know.
So be careful,
and it's like,
though.
I said, you know, I might just show up on your doorstep. And then they said, please do. They invited me.
Good deal. So you're going to focus on writing that when you're down
yeah.
there?
Yeah.
Okay.
And well, you're not gonna besides be going to the beach.
Okay. All right, so there'll be some vacation-y stuff in there.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I hope that works out and you have a really productive time. I guess, I can identify then a theme that you're trying to find this life balance thing between your social life and your creative life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very familiar with that scene or that whole theme. I guess, but we can, that might be something that we can build on as far as the thing we're going to create as part of the podcast. But I want to, but before, I just did want to ask you though, like you'd said before that the acting class had helped you. And I was curious, like, how did, you know.
I thought, you know, I was so depressed, but yeah, I would come into your class and, you know, and you would make us do this meditation and all this. And then, see, I couldn't hardly think. I was in such bad shape. But when you threw me into that improvisational situation, I could think of things. And I could pretend to be a person again by being someone else. And my creativity came back.
Hey.
And it was like better than therapy, you know, because you were always pushing us, you know, to be creative and imaginative and you know, you would make me memorize those parts, which was really good for me too, and be another person. And so it was like I reimagined myself into being a person again.
You could kind of rebuilt yourself from the inside out or
yeah.
vice versa. Hey, what's up? Well, that means a lot to me. That's really great to hear. I'm glad that had that effect. And well, didn't, but is acting, so it had, you know, I do believe that acting is very therapeutic, and it helped me a lot in a lot of the same ways that you're talking about. It broke me out of my shell. I became less self-conscious, and I became a lot more myself. A lot of stuff that would make me second-guess myself all the time, I was able to throw it aside. But I do also enjoy acting and would do it as a craft, and mm-hmm. it's part of being a comedian for me. Is that something
I don't know. I don't know if I want to go in that direction. What I've been thinking more is stand-up comedy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, well.
I took a class in stand-up comedy.
The hoary beast of stand-up.
No, I've been trying to, you know, make up jokes.
Oh, I see. Did you take the one at Community University this fall? There was a
yeah.
stand-up. Oh, you took that. Mm-hmm. How was that? How'd that go?
It was all right. I wanted him to give more examples, you know, of how to write a joke.
Mm. Well, there's no one way to do
it. I'm still having, you know,
Did you?
I write funny stories, but if you're going to do stand-up comedy, it has to be laugh, you know, couple of sentences, laugh, couple of sentences, laugh. You can't just go on in some big, long tale.
No, you can't. You really, really can't. Right.
So I'm seriously thinking, you know, of trying to put it together, and there's, you know, a place on Broadway where, you know, I went to this. It's an open mic thing, you know, and anybody, anybody can come and sign up.
Yeah.
No, I went there and I saw it, and then I started thinking about doing it, but I haven't got it.
You haven't
quite
gotten yet.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't got it quite together yet, but that's another direction I might be going in. Well, and some people tell me, you know, that I'm funny, and, you know, I have to get a character, though, to be.
You don't
have to.
It's one of the techniques that you could choose to.
I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to do yet in that direction, but I'm very interested in it because I'm a big ham. You know, I think I would just really love getting up and, you know, showing off and getting people's attention and making them laugh and stuff like that. I think it would be a really fun thing to do.
A lot of people, including myself, are attracted to that aspect of comedy, that you're at the center of things and you get to, when you see it going right, there's this one person and all these people happy. I mean, who wouldn't want to be giving that to the world?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's no reason. I encourage everybody if
So I'm exploring different. I'm in a period of big creativity.
Oh, that's great to hear.
And well, it's a good thing and it's a bad thing. See, because I have to be very careful.
That otherwise the demons or something, or the you're being hunted by the cartels. Or, like...
I'm a manic depressive.
Oh.
And I have to be real careful.
Because if you go down...
Because
the spiral,
I quit doing my medication.
I see.
Because it was making my hands shake. And I didn't know what the problem was. And then I found out that it's that medication.
I see.
That causes hand shaking. And it's a lot better now, but, and all of a sudden I, you know, started writing and started doing all these things, and I just have to be careful.
Because you might, okay.
Because I might
get triggered,
go over the edge.
I see.
And then I start doing really crazy things.
Yeah. Right, well, yeah, we want to stay out of that territory, and that's, well, I guess I do encourage people, if they feel like it, definitely go out and do stand-up comedy. However, having spent a lot of time in the stand-up comedy world, it is something that can drive people insane. It is something that, it's like chess. You know, you can bathe. It's like they say about chess is a mosquito can bathe or an elephant can drown.
Uh-huh.
You know? So, like, what you're talking about, maybe having a character or something.
Yeah.
There's two choices you can have at the beginning of a stand-up comedy act. One is I can be a totally fake person. The other one, I can be totally honest. I can be myself. And there's a lot of people like Andrew Dice Clay, for instance, or Andy Kaufman, who would put on like this whole persona, and that would be their act, that they would stay inside of it, or Larry the Cable Guy, whatnot.
Well, so I'm not sure which way I'm going to go with that.
But that's why I would advise against that route, because creating, if you have other mental stuff going on, having another deep, and it could be the same way with acting, right? Having a deep character that you get into can be emotionally affecting, or it can cause you to second guess yourself or hear voices or something like that as the character, right? You don't want that. But the idea of just trying to make fun of your condition, because so many comedians are manic depressives, I'm not manic depressive, but I have definite moments where people say that you're depressed, and I'm like, I'm just mad at the world, but people are like, you're depressed, whatever. But it is a way that you can deal with your depression. Mm-hmm. If you feed the things that you're angry about into this kind of process that helps you, look at it with a lighter side of things.
Yeah.
So that's a technique. Yeah. If something really makes you mad, that's the most powerful thing maybe comedy has taught me, is if something makes me upset, or I am mad about, then rather than, you know, banging my head against the wall, I'm more likely to go with my notebook and say, how can I make fun of this thing that's infuriating to me?
Yeah.
And that's a really, that's the process anybody can use. And we do use it on like a non-industrial level on a day-to-day basis. Oh, I'm pissed off this driver, you idiot. Make fun of him. Oh, you're wearing a funny hat. But when it comes to something like Walmart, you know, or that's where I run into problems. And when dealing with like global issues, like the Israeli-Palestine conflict, I can't, how do you make fun of something that's so twisted and dark already? But that's, so it can go down to that level. Yeah. But if you, so just be careful of what depth you're getting into. So if you have a bad show or something like that, then it could really throw you off. And
yeah, and I have to keep track of the light because I have a real problem driving in the dark.
Oh, yeah, we don't want to stay too long. That's all I wanted to ask about, really. I think we're at the point now where we can start creating our thing, which will be some kind of piece of art about how to, why don't we do a public service announcement about how to prevent, how an artist can protect their creative process from distractions. How about that?